This is our number
10. It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
I am so proud of myself. I just did something.
What'd you do?
Ago.
There was a lot of commotion back there.
During
the newscast, what were you guys doing?
I edited an audio clip for the first time in my career.
Okay.
How exciting is that?
That is exciting.
I don't know how to load audio or edit audio or any of that stuff.
Uh-huh.
I'm probably the only talk host in America who has never done that sort of thing.
No, you'd be surprised.
Really?
I'm not sure any of the hosts here do that.
Dave Ross does.
Oh, Dave Ross.
Dave definitely does.
Dave
okay, yeah, right. Definitely Dave.
Okay,
I don't know that anybody else does.
Maybe
Tom, because he does his movie stuff. But
I was at the Ron Bailey
here.
School of Broadcast. I learned how to cut the reel-to-reel tape with the razor blade.
Uh-huh.
And you would make a mark and run it over the, things.
Yeah.
And then make a mark with a little grease. I don't know. I'm not a very technical guy. And you would physically cut the tape and splice it together.
Yes.
I knew how to do that. Then we went digital about 20 years ago, 25 years ago. And I just never learned because I've had great producers my whole life.
When you get proficient at it, it's going to be a whole new world.
I'm not doing it again. I just wanted to do it once.
I guess I should say probably half of the hosts here don't, and you don't know who falls into what half. So
okay.
There you go.
I don't need to know either. So, anyway, that was exciting. Oh, I'm going to play the soundbite in the course of the Fastest 15 that I edited.
So you know, one of the many great things about the show, we really pull the curtain way back.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very exciting for me. So, yesterday I was talking about if you want to save some gigantic tax money, Evergreen State College, where the enrollment has plummeted because George Bridges, the university president, the weakest leader I have ever seen, let students take him and other members of his administration hostage last year. When they asked if they could go to the bathroom, the hostage-taking anarchists said, "We have to go with you." They literally locked them in a building. They screamed, "Bleep you, George," in the president's face. And because they are such weak, pathetic leaders there at Evergreen, they actually let that happen. It's unbelievable to me. So I was saying yesterday, if you want to save $200 million every biennium in Washington, we've got to get rid of Evergreen State as a public university. And you know what we're getting for our $200 million? Nobody wants to send their kids there. It's not an option for 98% of normal families because it's too radical. U.S. News and World Report labeled it the most radical leftist college in the United States of America. There is no equivalency in the state of Washington for kids who might be a little conservative, libertarian. There's no public university like that, but we have the most radical leftist liberal. And as I said, they radicalized this poor girl so much she stood in front of a bulldozer and gave her life. So Evergreen State, I was talking yesterday, freshman class is down to 300 students, according to a professor down there. And this is even making national news. So I told you the whole story yesterday. And then last night, Tucker Carlson, he told the same story, the whole nation recognizes what a joke Evergreen State is. And I want you to pay particular attention. This is the audio clip I just edited all by myself.
According to an Evergreen professor called Mike Peros, the whole episode in effect destroyed the school. Freshman enrollment at Evergreen has fallen to below 300 students this fall. That's a 50% drop from just 2 years ago. The school has canceled the planned dorm renovation, cut its budget, and announced layoffs, unfortunately not of the president. If things keep moving in this direction, Evergreen will close. For once, a happy ending.
Yeah, it's dying on the vine. So get rid of the public funding, save some taxpayer money, and get rid of this nut house. In fact, as the listener said last night, take the money, because Western State Hospital is, you know, they're in desperate need of funding, and they've lost accreditation because of a lack of leadership there and by the governor. Take money from one nut house and give it to the other. Take it from and not that I want to call crazy people nuts. I don't want to get into a whole Norm MacDonald thing here. But, yeah, just take it from Evergreen. Put it into Western State. Next up in the Fastest 15. So speaking of Norm MacDonald, so have you been following this at all? I led the show with it yesterday.
Okay.
Norm MacDonald is the funniest stand-up alive. There's nobody who makes me laugh harder than Norm MacDonald.
You have actually paid money to go watch him.
I saw him the night after I went to a concert with you in Vegas. My wife and I and another couple went and saw Norm MacDonald down in Vegas just a couple of months ago. And that was really the main reason we planned the trip for that weekend, because we got the Norm MacDonald tickets. So nobody funny. So he's promoting his new Netflix show, which begins tomorrow. And he does an interview with The Hollywood Reporter. And he was talking about a friend of his, who the comedian Chris Hardwick, who had one woman accuse him of something. And Chris Hardwick basically lost his career. Now he's fighting slowly, getting things back. But he lost everything that he was doing, every gig that he was doing. And what Norm MacDonald said was that he thought the pendulum had swung too far on the Me Too movement. And this is something that you and I have talked about before. He said it used to be 100 women accuse you. Obviously, you're guilty. Then it becomes one woman accuses you and will assume you're guilty. And he said that's happened to my friend Chris Hardwick. And he said, I think the Me Too movement has gone a little bit too far. And he said at some point, some innocent person is going to get accused and they're going to put a gun in their mouth. And he said, I don't want to see that happen.
I mean, yeah, there's just a problem with those sweeping kind of statements, because then it invalidates other people who have legitimate, you know, issues and things that have happened.
Like, Bill Cosby's guilty. There's so many women. The Harvey Weinstein, I'm going to play some Harvey Weinstein audio in just a minute here. That's unbelievable. But that was Norm MacDonald's whole point. So he goes to the Tonight Show. He had a gig for two nights ago. And Jimmy Fallon comes in and says, how do you want to play this? Because that Hollywood Reporter article had just come out. And he goes, well, why don't we just address it at the end of our interview? Because if we talk about it at the beginning, it'll, you know, it'll blow up everything and we won't be at all funny. And then Jimmy Fallon goes out and then he comes back in and goes, hey, buddy, I got to talk to you. I've got a lot of women staffers and they're crying. They don't want you on tonight. Because the man dared say, maybe we got to get a little more equilibrium in this Me Too movement. And so they canceled his appearance because of that. And I'm thinking, why couldn't they just talk about it? Why couldn't?
In fact, that would have been a great opportunity to bring it up and then for him to explain and put it into context.
And so then he goes on Howard Stern yesterday morning. And I don't have audio of this yet, but he said on Howard Stern, look, obviously I wasn't trying to diminish the victims of Louis C.K. and Roseanne. He goes, you'd have to have Down syndrome to think that I'm diminishing the victims or that I don't care about the victims.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So his apology made things even worse. And so he goes on The View, I think it was this morning, he goes on The View. And I don't know that I've ever heard, and again, this is the person I think is the funniest, and he's funny to me. He's very politically incorrect. And when you're on Howard Stern, you're in an environment that encourages looseness and political incorrectness. And so that's why he said what he said. He didn't mean anything horrible. He's actually a very kind man, and he's a very thoughtful person. But he sounded like the most broken human being ever on The View this morning.
Well, I was, print reporters, they ask you questions and then put them all together. What I was talking about was Chris Hardwick, this particular comedian that was a friend of mine. And, you know, if 500 women go against a man, obviously the guy's guilty. But then the Chris Hardwick one, it was one woman against one man. You know, so I was saying, that I thought it was good that the pendulum was slowing and Chris Hardwick has been as rehabilitated as he's going to get. He still tells me he can't walk down the street without people yelling stuff at him.
Yeah.
But that's all I was trying to say. Okay.
And his point was, and he did say a couple of other things. He goes, look, Roseanne and Louis C.K., they lost everything. And he said their victims didn't lose everything. And that was the thing that really got him in trouble. And he recognized that that was stupid. And he tweeted out a very sincere apology after that Hollywood Reporter print interview. And here's his explanation of that.
Not many of us have gone through this. And so you should talk to each other because and then the guy said, what about the victims? And I said, well, the victims haven't gone through this. I was talking about this particular event. Of course, the victims have gone through worse than that. But I'm going to get a victim to phone Roseanne?
No, but that's a good clarification.
And so it is a reason. I mean, even Whoopi says that that's a good clarification. But then the Howard Stern comment came up on The View.
It's always bad when you have to apologize
for the apology.
An apology. Mm-hmm.
Do you lose it when you're on Howard? Is that what happens, Joe?
Well, there is a thing on Howard where there's a recklessness in the studio. And, it used to be a word we would all say to mean really? Stupid that we don't say anymore. Mm-hmm. Right?
You know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
He said, everybody always used to say that's retarded. You'd have to be retarded. And he goes, we don't say that anymore. And he says, okay, so I caught myself. And then he spit out the other stupid thing.
Yeah. You know the word I'm talking about? Yes. Yeah. And stupidly, I was about to say that word.
And you put this.
And I stopped and said, what's the right word to say? And then I said a different word that was equal.
Yeah.
Did you realize offensive. At that moment that probably offended?
I realized at that moment that I'd done something unforgivable.
How is that unforgivable? It's inartful. It's probably stupid. Mm-hmm. Although it's not on Howard. If I said it on this show and meant it, I mean, I'm repeating what he said. If I said it, that'd be a problem. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't talk like that on this show on Cairo Radio. When Norm MacDonald's built his whole career on political incorrectness and he's on the Howard Stern show and he says something like that, this is out of control, these witch hunts. It's absolutely out of control.
And I think to some extent I would agree with that. But even on this Chris Hardwick thing, I don't know enough of the details, but just because Norm MacDonald's his friend and says it didn't happen or it didn't, you know, again, it just, he sticks himself, he's putting himself in a position where he could be.
Right. But his point was Chris Hardwick had one accuser. And
one accuser can be enough.
Yes, it can. But there certainly wasn't any compelling evidence from that one accuser. And he loses he hosted a network show, primetime network show on NBC. He had a bunch of other gigs. He lost everything based on what, and that's all Norm MacDonald was saying. I don't think he was even judging the guilt or innocence, but he's saying, should people lose everything based on the word of one accuser? And he said, you know, Cosby, obviously, but, you know, and even Louis C.K., clearly Louis C.K. is guilty. So then he got.
Sound really I mean, he sounded like he had a tough 24 hours.
Oh, it was awful. He told about the Tonight Show thing.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, yeah, I have been surprised because, I never did anything. Mm. I mean, I spoke, but I mean, I don't want to be tossed in with people that actually did, not crimes, but sins or, I barely have consensual sex.
Okay, that was funny.
You want to hear a broken man saying goodbye?
Thanks for coming to us to talk to us about this.
Well, I hope that I didn't offend any of you guys.
Not at all.
No.
This is out of control. All the man did was talk in a way that wasn't approved by a group of people, and now he's getting lumped. It's insanity. Now, here's a guy, next up in the Fast 15, here's a guy who, have you watched this Harvey Weinstein video yet?
Not yet.
Okay. A woman had developed some kind of social media platform that she thought would be perfect for Harvey Weinstein to promote his movies. And she got a meeting with his company. She thought that
And when was this?
It was six years ago. 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay.
So she thought she was meeting with his marketing team. Instead, she ends up meeting one-on-one with Harvey Weinstein. He walks in by himself. Mm-hmm. And she is able to record video and audio of this encounter with Harvey Weinstein. Okay, so he tells, he locks the door. He tells his staff that he wants complete privacy as he's in the room with this woman.
How's your day?
How's your day?
I was thinking, okay, he's hugging me. What do I do now?
He starts by, she goes to shake his hand. He hugs her and starts rubbing his hand up and down her back while he's hugging her. Their initial meeting here.
I was sensing I have to be a little bit more vigilant of this situation than I originally thought.
Melissa and Weinstein have met briefly once before, but this is their first formal encounter.
So I'm allowed to flirt with you?
Am I allowed to flirt with you? And he's got this big, gigantic belly. He's a physically disgusting human being.
A little bit, not much.
Okay, so now here's the question. She goes, well, a little bit. If she sells her platform to Harvey Weinstein, it's going to make her career. You know, and there's kind of a young woman. She's launching this company. And so he says, can I flirt with you? She says, a little bit. He starts rubbing her leg up and down, moving his hand up her skirt.
Okay. Then I won't. So what do you want?
No, it's okay. So I have your hand in so many things, and you do so many things. So I have a lot to tell you. Every time that he towed the line of being inappropriate enough where I may have said something, he could sense it, and he pulled back and he changed the dynamic again.
Let's say I wanted to show a trailer, my movie. I have the Marilyn Monroe movie.
Cool. So let's talk about Marilyn Monroe movies.
So then he would start talking about, okay, I'm interested in your product. I might buy it from you.
Who would be interested in that movie?
It's fun way to do this.
Okay.
But I'm actually seriously having a conversation.
Good.
So now he's moving his hand up her skirt.
Both.
Okay.
So would it be, what's the target demographic?
Women.
Okay, so we're going to buy space, we're going to buy ad space on Vogue.com.
Do you think you might have encouraged him?
I don't think I purposely encouraged him. At first, I tried to, volley a little bit with him. You know, if he would make a comment, I would try to catch it and return it in a way that felt a little safer than the way he threw it at me.
And so, they're asking this woman, well, should you have just gotten up and walked out? But it's Harvey Weinstein. It's going to make her professional career if he buys off on this. And she's in this horrible situation. It is the most disgusting. I wanted to vomit as I was watching this morning.
I mean, it's like listening in on a predator.
It is. And if he does that in the initial meeting with this woman, you know he did that to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of women. And then that night he said, okay, I'm buying your product. Meet me at some hotel lobby. He walks, sees her there, says, follow me. She thought they were going to a conference room. She went into his hotel room where he raped her, she claims. But then some people are saying, well, why would you, if he's rubbing up your leg and putting his hand on your breast in the video you have, why would you go into his hotel room? So some people are like blaming her, but she's trying. I mean, I understand. I understand the professional pull of it, but, he is a disgusting human being. I'll play you more of that in the big lead. You got to hear more of that audio. It's unbelievable. And that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
You got 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Next up, another exclusive interview. I told you about this at the top of the show. I think our governor is being very petty to our police officers. I'll explain next. I just saw a tipster sent me an unbelievably petty letter from Governor Jay Inslee to an organization that's been around for more than 100 years. Let me tell you a little story. Back in 1903, there was a Civilian Marksmanship Association, and it was where competitive shooters could get together They could have competitions. And ever since then, we've had groups like that in our state. There's a citizens group. In fact, in that citizens group last year, a 16-year-old high school junior girl was one of the winners. They also have the Washington State Police Pistol Association, where our police officers can competitively shoot. And they've always been awarded what's called the Governor's 20 Certificates. It's where the governor of the state signs a certificate congratulating the winners of these competitions. But those certificates will be no more. Let me welcome to the show Jane Milhans. She's a firearms instructor down in Pierce County, and she joins us here on Cairo Radio. Jane, good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you too, Dory.
So tell me a little bit. So did I fairly capsulize what these competitions are all about?
Yes, and the Governor's 20, which you're right, has been around for years. And it's a competition of law enforcement officers, and they are competing for skills. And so the top law enforcement officers with the precision shooting skills, you know, just like other competition shooting, there's bullseye and long range, there's all different kinds of competition shooting, and people have skills in that. So the top 20 we're going to be awarded at a banquet with their certificates, and you are right. They're just, the governor refuses to sign those.
let me just read a little bit from the letter that Governor Inslee's office sent to these organizations. We are returning the unsigned certificates to you. Governor Inslee is no longer able to support any program affiliated with the National Rifle Association due to the organization's obstructive efforts to undermine common sense gun safety measures, including those that enjoy broad public support. We understand competitors will be disappointed by this decision. However, the governor believes constructive conversations and meaningful action around gun safety are necessary to better protect our families and communities. So we've been doing this for 115 years in our state, and the governor will no longer support it.
Exactly. And the thing that I find ironic about his letter, too, is that a big arm of the NRA, in fact, they started to originally for safety training and to train marksmanship. So, like, I'm a certified NRA instructor,
right,
and the big focus and emphasis is all on safety. And even the NRA, speaking of law enforcement, will provide training to smaller law enforcement agencies that don't have the manpower to teach for a training department.
Well, and as I understand it, I talked to another member of this organization, and as I understand it, the extent of the NRA's involvement is that these competitions are registered with the NRA, so shooters can get classification, and if they set a national record, they could be recognized for that. As I understand it, that's about it for the NRA's involvement with all of this.
Yes, you're exactly correct. That's all their involvement is.
And so what's
and
your...
they set the standards, too, so that all states, you know, they're all states competing in this competition have the same set of standards. So that's about it.
And so what is your reaction when you see a letter like this from the governor?
Well, my first thoughts was I thought he was spitting in the face of law enforcement officers, for one thing, because, you know, it's an honor to win the awards, for one thing. And law enforcement officers, you know, they lay their lives on the line every day. And I feel they deserve the recognition. So I was saddened by that. I was also saddened that he has not reached across the aisle to talk to people like me, you know, to talk about why women are firearm owners. I, you know, volunteer hundreds of hours a year teaching women because as a survivor of a home invasion, you know, it's real important to me that women learn how to safely protect themselves. And so, yeah, I was just really disappointed.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, in your neighborhood, I just saw a story this morning about a horrible story. Two guys in their 20s who held a knife and threatened to rape an 81-year-old woman in her apartment on Sunday and threatened to, or they stole a bunch of stuff from her. Yes, we do have the option under our Constitution to be the first line of defense for ourselves. And, yeah, to see the governor just spit in the face of this, it's pretty remarkable. And especially when one element of it is, as you said, the police officers' competition. If it's something the officers cherish, I'm amazed. But I also know he's doing this because he wants to run for president and he can get up in his speeches and talk about how he fought against the NRA. I know that this is all, that's all this is about.
Yep, you're exactly correct.
Yeah.
He has turned this into a political situation instead of being a non-biased, non-partisan governor that he should be, and recognize these law enforcement officers. So
pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is. Well, just really disappointed.
I appreciate all of you using my show to shed a light on this, because this is incredibly petty by the gov.
It very much is, and I really appreciate you letting the listeners know what's going on as well.
Absolutely. Jane, thanks for coming on with me today.
You're so welcome, Dory. It's a pleasure once again, and thanks for having me on.
Okay. Jane Milhans, a firearms instructor down in Pierce County. So there you have it. Governor Inslee will no longer sign certificates for a competition that's been held since 1903 because they register their competitions with the NRA so that they can get classification in national records. That's how much sillier can things get? Don't answer that question. I'm sure I'll see you in the next several years. Okay, I'd love to hear your comments. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. Lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. There you go, Sean. You inspired me yesterday, Sean. I had about 3 hours of Supertramp going this morning while
nice.
I was doing show prep.
That's so good.
Yeah, it was. It was good. I was inspired by it. That's why the show's so good today.
No, I know.
The soundtrack Thanks. With which you prep often sets the tone for the show.
I appreciate that. I inspire you sometimes. We've got some Supertramp, got some Deadmau5.
Yep.
I love it.
Yeah.
You even sent me a video via text months ago of your stereo system and you jamming out to Deadmau5. I found it delicious. It was great. That's delicious. Right. That's a weird word to describe that.
It was good. It was good. Okay, you know, the $15 an hour minimum wage here in Seattle. The people who supported it, were promoting it, they said it'll raise salaries and won't cost us anything. They thought they could defy the laws of economics. And, of course, we have seen with that University of Washington study that it's actually lowered the take-home pay of the middle or of the minimum wage workers because they got a bump in hourly, but they got a reduction in hours. And then I saw that Sawant and that whole crowd, they were promoting last week another Berkeley study. You know, they had to go and cherry pick and go to Berkeley to try to counterbalance the University of Washington study. And there's some Berkeley study that was only focusing on one aspect, like the fast food industry or something. It's like, oh, no, no, it's working. It's raising salary. No, it's not. It's not. It's hurting people in the hours worked. But it's also really hurting taxpayers, citizens. Well, illegals, too, because they buy food. Our news partners over at Channel 7, Cairo TV, Steve Rabel had the report on what's happening to lunch prices here in Seattle.
The meal delivery service review website Food Oasis reports that prices in Seattle have spiked more than 50% in just a decade. Comparing archived menu list items from 2008, the website found that the average price has increased from $8.09 10 years ago to $12.93 today. That's in line with recent numbers from the Cost of Living Index, which found that Seattle was the most expensive city in America for miscellaneous goods and services, which covers everything from a burger to a haircut.
So you, if you buy your lunch, maybe you can't afford to buy your lunch every day, but $8 to $12, almost $13. So about a $5 increase over the last several years. So if you buy lunch 3 times a week, 5 times a week, that's $15 to $25 a week. Times 50 a week, that's a $750 essentially hidden tax. Now, prices would have gone up anyway over the last 10 years. But I looked at our consumer price index, and it's gone up so much faster in Seattle prices than the country as a whole, that it's just because of the cost of doing business in the city. That is about $2 of that $5 increase. So again, you buy lunch 3 days a week, that's $6. That's $300 a year, hidden tax. And like, there's a Fred Meyer deli that I would stop at once in a while coming into work. And they had a sandwich there that was $4.99. And now it's $5.99 just in the last year. It's gone up a buck. Why? Well, because the wages have gone up. So all of this nonsense, the workers aren't taken home anymore, according to the University of Washington. You and I are paying a lot more for the price of stuff. Now, you can get around it by not buying lunch every day. Make your lunch, bring it, which is what I do 95% of the time. I make my lunch, bring it in. But would you please, when these socialists and communists on the Seattle City Council, when they say, oh, no, we can just raise everybody's wages and it won't cost you anything. It'll just help people. That's not the way economics works. And when you have, and I don't know, maybe Sawant, who claims to have been an economic teacher at a community college or whatever, says she has a degree in economics. I don't know if she slept through class every single day in college, but the woman knows nothing about real life economics. She just knows how to be a shyster, a fraud, a con artist. That's all she is. And then at SeaTac, we told you yesterday, their international arrivals facility is now gone $300 million over budget. Peter Steinbrück with the Port of Seattle. Oh, he was shocked.
Yes, I was shocked to hear, you know, the escalating costs and delays.
Yeah, I'm shocked when I hear about government projects being 50% over budget and way behind schedule.
We have certainty going forward, this day forward. We have not had that certainty.
So they've done a reset. Hey, just like Sound Transit. Way to go, Port of Seattle. Now he's certain, now that they're $300 million over budget, that they've got it right going forward. Your government at work. Big Lead to 2 next.